Hello, welcome to another World of UX podcast. This is your host, Darren Hood. Thanks for taking the time to join us. Welcome, those of you who are tuning in for the first time. I don't normally mention this on the show, but I'm going to mention it today. I see other people doing it all the time, and I just never really gave it much thought. Folks, if the show is benefiting you, if you enjoy the content, if you are being vaulted forward, if you recognize the value that you are receiving on the World of UX, please make sure that you like the show. Please make sure that you subscribe. Please make sure that you share. Folks, it's interesting today in UX, before I get into today's content, it's interesting that there is a long-standing trend in the discipline. And the trend is that in the earlier days of the discipline, good content would always be shared with the masses and everybody embraced everything. And you didn't have to worry about things going, quote unquote, viral. Today, since 2011, and as I say all the time, there was no misinformation in UX prior to 2011. And today it's everywhere. Not only is misinformation everywhere, misinformation dominates, and it's misinformation that goes viral. Good content, solid content does not go viral. People tell me all the time how much they enjoy the show. People tell me all the time how they wouldn't be where they are without the content that's being presented, the keeping it real, letting people know what they need to know, not tickling ears, not coddling anybody, not playing any games, telling it exactly like it is. And people, a lot of people really appreciate it and they express that. Please make sure, if that is you, please make sure that you like the show. Please make sure that you subscribe. Please make sure that you get the word out. It's time for real content, for solid stuff to go viral. But it's interesting, on YouTube, hey, listen on YouTube. We're not doing video anymore right now. There'll be some new video content coming soon. But if you go and look at the content, when the show is produced, it automatically goes out to all of the podcasting resources, the place where you can get the shows, and it goes to YouTube automatically. You'll see 10, 15, 20 people listen to the show, 1, 2, 3 likes. That's it. I'm asking people if the show is helping you, if you find value in the show, please let people know by liking and subscribing. A lot of times we partake. I've been guilty in the past before too. You like something, you enjoy this show. And by like, I mean in your heart, in your mind, but you don't go to the physical. You don't do the thing that actually tells everybody else that you liked it by using the feedback mechanisms built into social media and into the resource outlet. Let's make sure to do that today, not just for this show, but to all the shows out there that have real value. It's time for, again, real content, the value that it has to be presented and reflected to the masses. There's garbage out there. I'll see something on LinkedIn, it'll have 300 likes, and it's total sheer and utter garbage. And people will get angry at me for saying that. And then 3, 4, 5 years later, they came to realize that what I said was accurate. And they have to sort of come back with their tail between their legs, so to speak. And some people are humble enough and honest enough to do that. We need to start championing solid content, folks. We need to start championing solid content. So that said, just a little bit of a sort of a public service announcement, because this is something that's near and dear to my heart, but I see it all the time. And I was watching a show. I'm getting into my little home barista thing, and I'm watching all these videos about coffee and latte art and how to pull a good shot of espresso and the things you got to do. And I see this content and I love this content and I'm benefiting from this content. And I make sure to like it. I make sure to leave comments at times to do all these things so that the people will be benefited. And I heard somebody say, hey, if you like my content, if this is benefiting you, please like or share or subscribe, because that helps the channel. And that's when the light bulb came on for me. So I'm going to start asking people to like, to subscribe, to share. So if you haven't done that already and you enjoy the show, please do that today. All right. We are continuing with our current topic where we're focusing on harsh realities of UX maturity. And very brief summary, most of us, practically all of us, really, who learn about UX maturity, when we learn about it, it's always presented from an organization perspective. And not only does that sell us short, but I found over the years, and I learned the same thing, and I used to talk about the same thing. And when it used to be my job to manage UX maturity at an old job, that was the way I looked at it initially. But then I started to notice it applies to projects. It applies to stakeholders. It applies to teams. It applies to so many different things. And I came to the realization that when we look at UX maturity from an organization standpoint only, we are selling ourselves short, folks. We are missing out on a lot of other areas where UX maturity applies. And in so doing, we're missing opportunities to drive things forward for ourselves, for our teams, for the practice as a whole. So this series is being used to address different aspects of UX maturity from a very granular perspective. All those things that, because we're focusing on organizations and all these other areas are out there, I'm trying to bring a lot of different things to light and trying to illustrate the connection between UX maturity and things that people don't realize. And when we look at it from a granular perspective, we afford ourselves a lot more opportunities to grow and to have impact as practitioners, and as well to grow as individuals. So I've been covering a lot of different subtopics, if you will. And this one, I think this one, talk about traction, talk about people subscribing and liking. This is going to be the first time that we've ever broached this particular topic. And so I hope it strikes home. Of course, because we have time limitations, I cannot be holistic, but we're going to be planting seeds and giving folks some food for thought. And tonight we want to talk about UX maturity and the fear of artificial intelligence. UX maturity and the fear of artificial intelligence. Now, everywhere you look today, we see people posting or talking about how AI is going to take our jobs as UX professionals. And a lot of people's jobs have been lost. And we'll get into a little bit of the why associated with that before we're done. Because of that, many people are afraid of AI. They've been afraid of AI since the hype really started to expand a bit. At no time in our history have we ever been faced with a paradigm shift that came with expectations of job displacement. Never. When mobile came along, that just expanded things. When the issues associated with responsive design, adaptive design came along, that just expanded things. When people started having to build apps, that just expanded things. So this is the first time, because now we're talking about a technology that, based on levels of UX maturity, there's one of the tie-ins, folks. Based on levels of UX maturity, that will determine what an organization decides to do, or even what a team decides to do because of AI, because some people, if they don't understand what UX is, and they think that, you know, AI can do the same thing that my UX people are doing, and truth be told, we're not going to like this, in some companies, it's actually true. But that's because UX maturity is practically non-existent. Let me pause for the cause and jump forward, give you a little bit of the end from the beginning. AI does not displace UX. It actually calls for higher levels of expertise. So because of that, and again, I'll explain that before we're done today, because of that, AI doesn't replace us. There's no reason to fear it. There are several reasons, however, to embrace it. There are reasons to try to learn how to work with it. There are reasons to understand and try to figure out how to integrate AI into the way that you do the work so that you can, hey, I mean, because it's not going anywhere. AI is not going anywhere, folks. So we need to learn how to work with it. So a little bit of the end from the beginning. I'm going to get back on track real quick here. I'm here to tell you that UX maturity is actually a key strategic point of focus regarding artificial intelligence because of the things I just mentioned. What can you do? Can you sit and really talk with your team and deliberate and find out, where can I use AI more? What can I do to deliver faster? What can I do to deliver better? What menial things can I hand off to AI so that I can stay focused on things that really AI can't do? Because folks, AI can't do everything. And again, we'll get into that just a little bit tonight. Not too much depth tonight, but again, we're presenting this at a relatively high level with a little bit of depth here and there. When we embrace and deliberately manage our individual, our personalized, our practitioner UX maturity, that is something that will help us to weather the storm associated with artificial intelligence, and it will help us to rise to the challenge. Let me give you a few bullet points associated with how we can handle AI and have the right attitude. So we just said this a few minutes ago. Should we be afraid of artificial intelligence? The answer is a resounding no, folks. It is a resounding no. There is absolutely no reason, not with just cause, to be afraid of artificial intelligence. We do not have to do that. Matter of fact, I'm a big advocate of identifying the thing that you're afraid of or anxious about and running toward it. So if you know, you're willing to acknowledge, Darren, hey, this AI thing, it's got me in a tizzy. I'm confused. I'm frustrated. I'm worried because of what I see some companies are doing. And we need to understand the story behind why some companies are doing that. It's because they lack UX maturity and it's going to come back to bite them. Matter of fact, I've talked to folks. I talked to somebody recently who they got let go because of AI. And then the company realized we still need those UX people. And then they ended up bringing the people back. So some companies are going to start to see those articles. They're going to start to hear about that. And it's going to keep them from making that decision. But please know and understand, is this the reality of it? I'm not saying it's not going to happen. I'm just telling you that they're wrong for doing it. It's misguided. It's short-sighted. It's not an expert move. AI is not going to replace, and it cannot replace, experts in UX. And I'm going to reinforce that here shortly. Folks, it's not here to replace jobs. It is, however, raising the bar.
The Fed's out of options. Rate cuts, money printing, balance sheet reversals. They call it policy, but it's really panic. This is Endgame Economics, where hope replaces discipline and the illusion of control finally breaks. They're not cutting rates because things are strong. They're cutting because the system is cracking. Inflation's eating savings. The labor market's stalling. Confidence in the dollar is fading fast. For decades, the Fed built a house of paper. Now they're striking the match that could burn it all down, leaving you to pay the price. When's the last time you actually held the wealth you've spent your life working for? My friends at Noble Gold Investments have been helping Americans move from paper wealth into real tangible assets. Numbers on a screen can disappear, but physical gold and silver, they've outlasted every crisis in history. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and get your free wealth protection kit today. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com for your free wealth protection kit. Discover how simple it is to protect your future.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
Artificial intelligence is raising the bar. I just started an AI intensive through Harvard on their data science group with Harvard. And the instructors in that program, they talk about how artificial intelligence should be used to focus on the more menial, the more repetitive and curation oriented type tasks. Part of that is my paraphrasing the part with the curation. The rest of it, they said literally, when I look at it, look in depth at what they're talking about. That's it. There are some things that can be curated. There are some things that are, as I always say, when I do talk about AI on this show, I talk about how AI can do some of the tasks associated with UX that are more on the finite science side of the house. But there are a lot of things in UX that are part of the infinite side of the house, the things that require more critical thinking, the things that require greater levels of expertise, the things that require your head to be on a swivel. AI can't do those things, but it can do some other things. And I'll give you some ideas later of how you can use AI. But they talk about, again, how AI should be used to focus on the more menial, the more repetitive, the more curation-oriented things, and leave the heavy-duty thinking and creative things to the experts. And AI can do some creative stuff too, but anybody ever played with AI trying to design an interface for you? I just got the biggest kick out of it because every time I saw AI design an interface, it was identical practically. So, and I'm talking about the architecture, the page's architecture. So AI will never outdo some of the people I have seen over my career. I have worked with some phenomenal, shout out to some of the people, and you know who you are if you're listening to this show and you worked with me in the past and you were a visual designer. I worked with people, award-winning folks, just dynamite folks. AI can't lift a finger to the work that I saw these people do. So there should be no fear. The fear is there because we lack expertise. Pretty much fear is always going to come up whenever there's an unknown factor, and that's everybody on the face of the earth. Whenever there's something we can't put our finger on, something we lose control of, something that we can't identify, fear starts to come into play. And so because people lack the expertise, they lack being grounded in the fundamentals, they lack having that longevity in their career, they lack a history of seeing how things ebb and flow in and around UX circles, it is natural. So I'm not criticizing these people. I'm not. I'm telling you how things work. And because of those things, those are the people that are going to be more prone to fear. I am not afraid of AI today. And even though I've started diving in a little bit more, and by the way, I'm not just going through a 2.5-week intensive with Harvard data science. I'm going back to school. Yes, I just got my PhD. Yes, I just finished a program and it took me 2 weeks to enroll somewhere else. I'm going to get a master's in artificial intelligence, strategy, and innovation, because I want to learn. I believe firmly in the fact that education, we're going to be talking about education. There is education or academia-based UX maturity. And education, properly structured education, fills gaps. So anytime you know that there are gaps in your life, and I know that there's a ton of artificial intelligence gaps in my life, I'm not going to sit out there and try to do it on my own. I got a challenge for you later in association with this. Can't wait to share it with you. I know I can't do it on my own. I can't rely on books to do it. I could get there. I was self-taught when it came to UX initially. And I'll tell the story one day about what happened when I got my first full-time UX gig and the gap that was there. And it was due to being self-taught. The people I was working with, everybody was better at UX than I was, all of them. And some of them hear the show sometime too, and they're going to go, wow, Darren, never heard you acknowledge that. Did I really have to say it? It was obvious. However, I was dedicated to learning. I was dedicated to be my absolute best. And in a year or two, you would not have known the level that I was at when I came through the door. So everybody's going to grow, but we need to be willing to admit when we have gaps, when we have blind spots, when we have areas where we need to improve. And so I know, and I also know that the best and the most sustainable and thorough way to fill those gaps is to go through formal education. And no, when I say formal education, I do not mean boot camps. Boot camps, a moment to jump on the boot camps for a minute. Boot camps have never structured education the right way. And that's one of the reasons why I detest boot camps, because they are an offense to the institution of education. So I'm talking about degree programs. I'm talking about certificate programs through accredited institutions, because accredited institutions are honoring and they are following the structure that education requires from an institutional perspective. Boot camps don't do that. Even some MOOCs, mass open online courses, Udemy's, the edX's of the world. Yeah, you can get something from those, but they're not always really, right, honoring and reflecting properly structured education either. So I'm going to make sure to call those things out. But at any rate, at Harvard, they're doing things the right way. The program is structured the right way. I am so excited, and I don't get excited much, folks. I am so excited about this program, and I will share. I'll give a download
probably be one of those special video-oriented presentations that I do on YouTube. I'm really excited about what this program has to offer. I've already filled some gaps that I had in my life with regard to AI. And again, can't wait to share a challenge with you at the end of the show. At any rate, let's move forward. This approach of giving the more menial, the repetitive, and the curation-oriented tasks to AI, this approach calls for having people that have extensive experience, because the folks at Harvard, with Harvard Data Science, they said that the person with the extensive experience, we're not displaced by AI, but we serve as a supervisor for that work, that agentic type of element that's in place. We serve as coaches. We serve as strategic exception handlers for all AI-supported activity. In order to have a successful AI implementation at any organization, you have to pair AI with people who know the discipline like the back of their hand. Real experts, not posers, retrofits, and upstarts. Not that. Folks who really know what they're doing. And so they can guide and temper AI to make sure that AI is going to bring forth benefits and have the impact that everybody wants, and not just doing stuff. There was a story, sort of leaning back on the folks with the Harvard Data Science group, again, that educational piece that I'm a part of. They share a phenomenal story. They said that 78% of enterprises today use AI. That's a lot. That's a lot of people. That's a lot of company. That's a lot of money at stake, isn't it? But you would be surprised to learn that they said a whopping 80% of those enterprises report absolutely zero financial impact. You know why? They're what I constantly refer to as hamsters. They're professional hamsters. I talk about UX hamsters and tell people not to be a UX hamster, but you don't want to be an AI hamster either. They're going fast. That's what hamsters do. They get in the wheel and they go fast, lightning fast. But when they're done with all that fast movement, where have they gone? Absolutely nowhere. So they're going fast, but they're doing nothing of substance. 80% of the companies, the enterprises using AI, have nothing to show for it. They have a bunch of running in the hamster wheel, and that is it. Folks, we don't want to be that person today. So a few closing statements and challenges. Don't be afraid of AI. Don't. There's no reason to be afraid of AI. Make sure you're grounded in UX fundamentals. And I did a talk on that. It was for a UX conference, but the topic of the conference was AI. And my talk was about fundamentals, that AI does not preclude you or release any of us from the responsibility of being grounded in fundamentals. Fundamentals are a major driver for practitioner-oriented UX maturity. And everybody's level of UX maturity is limited to how grounded you are in those fundamentals. This puts us in the best position to supervise, to coach AI agents. It's the fundamentals. Folks, it's the fundamentals. You hear all this stuff, Darren. I hear you. I appreciate it. I'm excited. And yeah, I admit, I was afraid. But Darren, I want to do better. What can I do? Education for the win, folks. AI education resources abound. Maybe you don't want to do, you may have seen some of these, like the intensive that I'm going through with Harvard Data Science. Maybe you don't have that money to spend. Maybe you don't want to pay for a degree. There are still education resources out there. There are a lot of them, but just make sure that you're opting into personal growth, that you search for, look for solutions, look for something that fits what you need to do. There are even some free ones. I'm going to put together a recommendation list for learning AI very soon. I'm going to finish my intensive first because I want to be a little bit more informed before I do it. Hint. Well, some people, they don't do that. They just want to be out there and make a name for themselves. I want to give you things of substance. I want to give you something that's trustworthy. So make sure you're opting into personal growth. Make sure you're subscribing or renewing your subscription to lifelong learning. This is critical. You've got topics like AI foundations, that includes math, programming, and data handling. And then newsflash, you don't have to learn about AI on the technical side. There's different ways to learn about AI. Again, the master's that I'm going to be getting in artificial intelligence focuses on things from the strategy and innovation perspective. There's nothing technical in the program. There's no programming courses in this degree program. I'll learn about it later. I'm sure I've seen some things and heard about things that can be done with Python, and it will afford the ability for me to do other things. I get it. But for right now, the biggest value that Darren Hood gets is on the strategy side and on the innovation side, the business aspect of it. So I'm not going to be focused on the math, the programming, and the data handling, but those are cited as being foundations for learning more about AI. You can learn about core AI and machine learning. You can learn about natural language processing and generative AI. You can learn about strategy. You can learn about agents. We'll talk about that again in a couple of moments. You can learn about domain focus application, maybe AI used in certain arenas, maybe health, maybe fintech, maybe insurtech, maybe automotive OEM. There's a lot of different venues out there, a lot of different domains, and then using AI across different domains, there's different needs and different business models that will come up. And when you become a specialist at that, that's something that could be pretty key. So it's another way to look at learning about AI. You can learn about prompt engineering. You can learn about the different agents, the different models, I should say, the different AI models that are out there. Learn about their strengths. Learn about their purposes and their specializations. You've got Claude Opus, Claude Sonnet. You've got DeepSeek. You've got Gemini. You've got GPT, not ChatGPT, GPT. That's the model. You've got Grok, you've got Nano Banana, which is for images. You've got OpenAI. There are different models, different AI models out there, and they have different strengths. I love using Opus, by the way. You want to learn about what the different models bring to the table because it will help you to understand where to place emphasis or where to place your focus or which one to use for which reason. It's really important to understand that. And yes, there is a difference between AI models and AI chat interfaces. For example, for those of you out there like me, I love DuckDuckGo as a search engine, and they have their own AI. It's called Duck AI. You can just go to duck.ai, and that is an AI chat interface. So you can ask your questions of Duck AI, and then it's going to go and tap into the different models to serve up responses. They tap into multiple models for theirs. Same with Perplexity. And I was using one earlier today, and you can actually pick which agent you want to tap into. And because of the work that I was doing, I knew that Opus was going to benefit me more than the one that was the default. So I chose Opus, and it was better suited for the work that I was trying to do. So just some important stuff to know. Perplexity taps into everything. And then I got a student discount. I've seen there's some videos on YouTube that will tell you how you can get Perplexity for 90% off. I mean, there's places that talk about getting it free. I also saw a video when it comes to learning about AI and which direction to go. I saw a video that said that you really don't want to pay for an AI model unless you need what you're going to get by getting the pro version of the associated AI model. They said, if you're just doing basic stuff, there's no reason for you to pay for a pro model. But if you're doing something that requires a bit more heavy lifting, then you do want to consider getting a paid version or a pro version of an AI model and subscribing. But there's ways for you to even minimize how much you spend, even in those cases. And last but not least, when it comes to topics, there's a concept of AI ethics and safety. You don't just dive in and do it. There's a way to do it the right way. Now, folks, AI can enhance UX operation and workflows in the following ways. I promise to give you a few ideas. I'm only going to tap into a few. I'm going to give a quick shout out to the folks at Nielsen Norman Group, who said You can use AI as a multiplier, as something that will enhance your work across almost every phase of UX. But they have this condition. Nielsen Norman Group stated, as long as you stay in control of the decisions, AI should not be making your decisions. That's for the professional. And the quality, AI does not determine the quality of the decisions. So keep that in mind. Here's your short list of ways that you can use AI in your UX work. You can ideate on designs. You can use AI to help hammer out the navigational elements. What are the labels that you're using? Your taxonomy, your nomenclature. AI can be used to help give you some ideas. You don't want it to make the final decision, but it can help accelerate you getting from point A to point B. So just another thing to keep in mind. You can use it to generate research summaries. You can use it to identify themes in your research data. You can use it to streamline and modify copy. I use Grammarly all the time. Grammarly is great. You don't have to pay for that either. I do, but you don't have to pay for it. You can get the free version of it. You can convert wireframes to interactive prototypes quickly, easy, simply. And you can also use it to not only generate survey questions, you already wrote survey questions or produced survey questions, run it back through AI. Ask AI what it thinks. It'll give you some things to consider. It'll give you some boxes to check, if you will, to make sure that you've done everything the right way before you get that thing out to the masses, before you get your participants involved. So just some quick and dirty, quick and easy ways to apply AI to your UX work so that you can produce the best work possible. Now, I said I had a challenge for you, right? So here's the challenge that I've got. For those of you who want to learn more about AI, especially if you don't want to go to a degree program, money's not the thing right now. Maybe you don't even have a job. Maybe you're in limbo right now. That's a great time to learn. That's a great time to build you. So here's the challenge. Go to any AI model or resource. My main recommendations would be Perplexity. And you're not going to be able to use it because they have this feature called Computer that just takes things to another level. I have not seen anything like Computer on Perplexity. Absolutely love it. But at any rate, go to the model of your choice and ask it. Ask AI to create an AI learning path or plan for you. Look at the results. You are going to be surprised. You are going to be surprised if you have not played around with AI much. Remember, folks, it's not going anywhere. It's not going anywhere. Let's start operating with it. So ask it to help you make a better you. When you get that plan, when you get the AI learning path, work it. Work the plan. Do what it has presented to you. Once you find your model, pick your model. And oh, and by the way, hey, might as well. Somebody's probably already thinking about this. You're already going to do this. Go to different ones. Ask them all the same question. Compare the results. And go with the one that you think best fits your needs, your schedule, everything about you. AI is going to present something that works for you. Now, when you do that again, you work the plan, you are on your way. You're going to learn more about AI. If you've been anxious about AI, you've been afraid of AI, you're going to start to see that fear dissipate. You're going to start to see the more confidence you build, the more than all that time you used to spend being afraid of something or worrying about something, you spend all that time in strategy. You spend all that time in application. Great things. Just that's where you want to be. That's what you want to do. So UX maturity, folks, no matter the type, whether it's organizational UX maturity, practitioner UX maturity, team, academic, discipline-wide UX maturity, all of them, UX maturity is now tied in. It's a part of it. How we handle AI, what we do with AI, has direct impact on our level of UX maturity. There's no getting around it. And the more UX mature we are, the more welcoming we'll be, the more we learn how to incorporate, to integrate it into what we do, and we're going to be better off for it. And don't forget, folks, don't be a hamster moving fast and going nowhere. Don't do that. Instead, accept the challenge and be an AI UX champion. All right, let's go do it, folks. I'm excited about this new chapter of UX and integrating AI into the work. I was hesitant for a while. I know some people are sort of chuckling in there. And I remember when you, Yeah, I was, but it wasn't because I was resistant. I didn't see where it fit. But when I took the time to start to deliberately identify where it fit, and something I tell my students a lot of times too, when you're trying to learn something, here's a quick learning tip for somebody looking for a shortcut to learning. You want to accelerate your learning path? I learned years ago, two things. Learn something so that it becomes second nature. Don't try to memorize anything. Approach it from a second nature perspective. Expose yourself to the content so much that you end up knowing it. So now there's no anxiety with that. There's no worrying with that. There's no lack of confidence with that. The second thing I wanted to recommend for you is that I found that when you are trying to learn something, especially when it's something new, something that you don't know much about, something that you know presents a little bit of a challenge, especially, I have found that when you find a way to tie in personal interests, personal goals, personal passions to the things that you're trying to learn, make it more personal by applying what you're trying to learn, connecting it to that personal thing, I have found that energy will help to vault you forward and make it a lot easier to learn. That is, when I have to learn about programming, I'm going to have to tie it to something personal. I know that's going to be a challenge for me, so I'm just going to tie it to something personal that's going to help me be more invested, that's going to help me be more focused. And so then the hurdles, the things that might be in the way of me advancing while I'm trying to learn about, when you do that and you're learning, it really helps to vault you forward. It's a great way to overcome hurdles associated with learning. Make it more personal through and through. When you do that, hey, you do it, let me know how it works out for you when you try it. I'm pretty sure that you're going to find that it will impact you quite a bit. But folks, that is it. We are going to wrap up here. That's all the time we have for today. So this is Dr. Darren Hood. I remember to say it that time. This is Dr. Darren Hood, the host of The World of UX, wishing everybody all the best. And until next time, happy UXing, everybody.